Hi guys, Craig here. Welcome to another edition of the podcast, Tell Craig Your Story. Today we'll be speaking to Zita Zhang. Now Zita is a former WWE and NXT superstar. She's currently signed as the very first MLW women's wrestler. She's also done mixed martial arts, and she's also a model, a singer, so she's had an amazing career so far. Before we go, please go to a Facebook page. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Tell Craig Your Story. And we're also on WeChat and VK for our Russian listeners. And we have a link there which tells you where Tell Craig Your Story is streaming. We are on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, to name a few. All right, so here we go. This is my chat with Zita Zhang on Tell Craig Your Story podcast. Hi, Zita. How are you doing today?
Hey, Craig. I'm doing well. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing good under these conditions.
Right.
Yeah, still in lockdown. So firstly, tell us how it is. You're currently in Taiwan at the moment, is that correct?
Yes.
And how is it affecting you? Like, how's your family? Is everybody fine? You know, how are you managing in this sort of period with the whole coronavirus?
Well, luckily, we're very safe here. The virus is not affecting Taiwan too much. There's no shutdown, and there's never been a shutdown. They're really strict with everything. So I saw in the news actually that Taiwan was rated number 2 for the safest place to be at during this pandemic. So luckily, I'm very lucky that my family is over here and that we're all pretty safe. Like, they're really strict with everything, but even before this whole virus, they've been pretty strict in general. So I think that's why it's been kept under control. It would be like the only difference now, like before, we would all wear face masks anyways, because yes, the pollution here is pretty bad. The air pollution, because they burn coal still. They don't go with nuclear energy. So the coal leaves all these ashes all over the place. So literally when you're out, sometimes you'll come home with your face kind of dirty from all the ashes. So everyone wears a face mask regularly just for the safety of their lungs. But we went over to a buffet to eat. Like, all the shops are, I would say, I don't really know how many are closed or how many are open, but the ones that are closed are more so closed because of their own choice. They closed because people aren't coming in due to the virus. They're scared and staying home. So it's affected businesses where they feel they need to close. And unfortunately, a lot of businesses, like smaller businesses, have to close completely, like permanently closed. But luckily, we're still able to go around and eat out, because that's a big culture in Taiwan, is eating out.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so much easier to go eat out than to go buy groceries, because buying groceries, actually, some of it comes out to be not that cheap. Sometimes it's actually cheaper when you go and eat out, surprisingly.
Yes. Yes,
yeah, like all the street food and stuff.
I would definitely agree with that. Like some of my listeners know already, I'm still living in Shanghai at the moment, and I would come in with when I first got there, I would come in with a fridge full of food, and then 1 week later, nothing. I wouldn't eat anything. I'd have to throw everything out. So I'm just takeaway. It's the best.
Yeah.
That's the best thing, and it's like you said, it's so much cheaper as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm just like, why aren't we all eating out? Like, I'd be so broke if I was in the U.S. trying to eat out every day.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, yeah, it's very different when we come back into.
Different.
Yes. And how And what are you doing now at the moment? Like, did you have scheduled events during this period that were all canceled?
Yeah, that's what really sucks about. It's like I love the entertainment industry, but it's not exactly economic proof.
Yes, definitely.
For performers, yeah, it's unfortunately all the shows have been canceled or pushed back, and a lot of these companies, I don't really know, you know, like, I'm not really sure because some people, a lot of the independent shows, like, I'm signed with Major League Wrestling, but yes. I'm on a very flexible contract, so luckily I'm able to take indie wrestling shows as long as it's not TV in the U.S., you know. So I'm able to take indie shows. But a lot of these indie shows, they're run by promoters who have to work to invest the money into the show. So it's not like, I mean, even if they did get money from the wrestling show itself, nothing is running right now. So it's unfortunate they're having trouble trying to get money because a lot of them are laid off. I think most people, you know, are in that situation. So I know a lot of other people are affected, minus the essentials. They're still affected, I'm sure, in some way. But it's, you know, whoever has a job right now is very fortunate. So
yes,
they need to cherish that with all they got.
Yes, exactly. An example here down here is like even the people that aren't working, you know, Social Security, our government is giving them money as well, even if they're not working, to help out in this time. So I don't think that's happening in China because I'm in the education and teachers, just like the entertainment, if there's no students to teach, then you're not working. So, you know, yeah, the people are very, very lucky if you're still working in this sort of period. So is the MLW, have they thought about doing what the WWE are doing and maybe doing, showing, you know, events like with no people in the arena?
I have not gotten an update on that, but I'm sure they've thought about it.
Yes.
The only issue, though, with that is with MLW, most of the people, they fly in. They fly into town. So
gotcha.
It's not very possible. Whereas with WWE, everyone kind of already lives there. You know, maybe there's a few people that is in town, but I don't think it's enough for them to really run a show. I'm not really sure because all the signed people, they're all over the place. They're all over US when with planes not being able to fly, there's just no way we can get over there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, right. And yeah. Speaking of which, did you get a chance to watch the WrestleMania that the WWE?
I have not caught up yet.
Right.
I'm on normal life here.
Yes.
Everyone's on lockdown and stuff, but you know, I'm still kind of going out, honestly. I'm still going out, kind of living normal life out here in Taiwan. So I've been out doing things.
Yes.
I have splurged on some movies and stuff, but I more so do it to hang out with the family. It's kind of like our bonding time.
Yes.
So to watch wrestling, that would be more like my own time.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard a lot of good things. I'm really excited to watch the Boneyard match and the Funhouse
yes.
one.
Yes.
I was told those were like the tops.
Yes.
Especially the Boneyard one.
Boneyard.
I see that being talked about nonstop. Mm. And then they said the tag match with Kabuki Warriors and then Nikki Cross and is it Alexa Bliss that is
very
it
good.
Alexa? Yeah.
I do believe so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I think it's them four. And then they said the one with Rhea.
Oh yeah, Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair. Yes.
Yeah, that one I'm excited to watch because I know Rhea's really, really good at what she does. Even back when we were in NXT together, like, even when she had just arrived, she was already very, very good.
Right.
So I can only imagine, you know, how much better she is at this point in time.
Yeah, she's getting a real good push, and I'm really excited for her to, you know, when the crowds do come back to the WWE, that she gets a really good opportunity. Did you actually get to do any matches with her?
Yeah, but we didn't work against each other. We were okay. On the same team, so it was actually back when before she was heel.
All right, so, okay.
Yeah, so when she was a baby face, we tagged together, but we were trained together, and she's always been super helpful and really nice.
Yeah,
so
right.
She's one of my favorite people actually there.
Speaking of your time off, like how do you sort of you know, with your dieting and your training, how is this affecting it as well?
Oh, the training. Oh god, yeah. So I have not trained properly for let's see, I've been here for at least a month and a half now, so a month and a half of like really not doing too much. But, you know, I guess it's kind of a blessing in disguise, because honestly, I got injured back in October.
Right.
Serious injury. But, you know, I still wrestle here and there a little bit. Very carefully I wrestle. That's why I haven't been on MLW, because, you know, liability issues. They want to make sure I'm safe. So I'm not officially booked on anything until I get a doctor's release.
It's a good time to heal up in this period, right?
Yes, because I'm always on the go. I never want to take a break, so
yes.
It's kind of a good thing now I'm not forced to take a break, so I should really take advantage of this. Otherwise, I would be taking indie shows here and there. I really shouldn't even take those, you know.
Yes.
But you know, right now I'm mostly doing physical therapy exercises at home.
Okay.
And even some of the gyms here, well, the gym I'm trying to go to out here is actually closed until the 25th. So, you know, they didn't even close until recently. Everything was fine when I was here back in March. Me and my dad stopped by there to try and sign up for it. And we're like, you know what? We'll sign up at the beginning of the month. That way it'll be easier to calculate, you know, a monthly fee.
Yes.
Because there was only a few days left. So we stopped by on April 1st to find out that it's closed until the 12th. So we're like, oh, great. We'll just wait till the 12th.
Go over there
on the 12th, and then it's closed till the 25th. Yeah. So I'm just like, oh, gosh. So now I'm just kind of working out at home. But, you know, luckily, the PT exercises, it's all body weight training. And I'm mostly don't even use weights, so it's not really like I super need a gym.
Yeah,
I can do everything with body weights. It's more so.
That's right.
Yeah.
Didn't Bruce Lee have that sort of theory? Like, if you could, you know, you could push your own body weight, that's sufficient.
Yeah, it's more efficient that way. You know, I'm not here to win a bodybuilding contest.
That's right.
I'm here to throw people, so you know, if I could throw my own weight around, I can probably throw someone else's weight around, because, you know, with everyone working together, unless it's like straight dead weight or something, but it's not, you know, so it's not like I'm throwing dead bodies around, you know, so, but basically, yeah, I don't really use weight training. The only things that I really want the gym for is resistant band training and kettlebells, because I don't actually have those, although I should probably get it. But right now is not a good time, because
yes.
I've heard dumbbells went up to something ridiculous, like $1,000 for a dumbbell.
Wow.
Yeah, for that.
Isn't that crazy?
Dumbbell from the Bowflex gym. Yeah, it's insane. $1,000. I didn't want to buy a kettlebell before because of how expensive it was.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, what? Crazy.
I'll just do some push-ups or sit-ups or burpees or something like that.
Exactly. So I'm just like, no, thank you. But luckily, here in Taiwan, all the parks here is basically like a gym.
Yeah, right.
So I could go to a park and just use their I guess they would call, I'm not sure, I guess they would be called machines. I don't know. It's not like electric powered or anything, but the way it's made, it's, you basically have your elliptical, you have like your cable workouts and stuff like that. They have some stuff there actually.
Yeah,
I just do body weight stuff. And it's been helping a lot. So, and also needing one of those boxes. I guess like a step up on a chair, but I need it the right height.
Gotcha.
So the thing that I'm waiting for in the gym, and more so, it's a nice way for me to not get distracted. Because when I go into a gym, I basically shut everything off. Like, well, I don't shut it off, but I don't keep it on me. Like, I don't really look at my phone. I just go in and get it done.
Get into it. Yeah. And when it does come back, will you still do events in Taiwan, or will you go back to the U.S., or what's your plan sort of when this thing eventuates?
It really depends. So I would like to go back to the U.S. I have a lot of things I need to get done over there, and I can't receive packages, which is a main thing also, because my sponsors are sending me stuff and I can't promote
it
for them. Yeah, I can't promote it because to have it sent over here would be something ridiculous, like at least $100.
Right.
So I'm just like, let me wait till I get back. So, but the problem though right now is, even if this virus does get better where they open up borders and flights, I just feel that it might not be that safe. I feel like there needs to be a bit of a waiting period to see what goes on before I go back. So if that is the case, I'll probably stay out here and just wrestle in other areas like Taiwan. I'm supposed to go to the Philippines, so hopefully Yeah, but it really depends on shows, because the thing is, the shows in Asia, there's not as many throughout Asia. So it's not like I can book up stuff easily. Sometimes with these shows, they sometimes run once a month, and that's a good thing. That's like good for them to run once a month. But some of them run like once every 2-3 months. So because of that, it's, I can't wait around for 2-3 months just to take a show, you know. So yeah, I mean, I guess it really depends. I do have shows technically booked in the US, but the whole situation has to depend on this virus.
Yeah, that's right.
First, you know.
That's right. And I recently, a couple of months ago, I interviewed a wrestler in the OWE, Oriental Wrestling Entertainment.
Okay, which one?
The one that's based in Shanghai, but now I think they moved to, when I spoke to him, he was doing events in Cambodia.
They moved to Cambodia now.
Yeah. So I spoke to Junji. So he invited me to one of his events in Shanghai, and had a great time, and kept in contact, and now he's in Cambodia. It was an interesting conversation, because he was like, come on, it's okay. Oh, my English is not very good, and you know, it's okay. Come on, we'll you know, we can edit it. And but it was a really interesting conversation with him. But have you been involved with those guys or not? No.
They contacted me to have me back, but it really depends on the situation.
Right.
I mean, well, unfortunately, one, I'm injured, and two, it depends on, you know, at the end of the day, it does matter on pay, because before, when they had their Shanghai location opened, I was getting paid pretty decent, actually. But even decent, I'm actually losing money being out there, you know, or breaking even. And I can't do that.
Yes.
Being in the U.S., you know, I got bills back home, too. So
yes, exactly.
So because of that, you know, it really depends. I went out there for a bigger opportunity before when I went out there for so long, but it honestly kind of hurt me being gone that long. And with Asia, they don't want to just bring you out one time or, you know, two times. They want you to stay for months.
That's all.
At a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
right.
Because of that, I just can't stay another 3 months. You know, that's way too long. And within the entertainment industry, like 1 month of not being active, you're pretty much dead to the world. So it's like you gotta be doing something in the media.
Yes.
For them to constantly remember that you're still alive and still doing this.
Exactly. I was looking on your Instagram account, and I guess you can be you're involved in Cameo, so you could do that all the time as well. How did you get involved with that?
They just hit me up. They just contacted me and was like, hey, can we put you in the database as one of our celebrities to do cameos? And then they explained it to me, and that was it. It was a nice and simple process.
Yeah, right.
Set up a profile and bam, there you go.
Have you had any stories or experiences with this Cameo? Because I'm sure you'd get some crazy requests.
Yeah, I have. I've had some weird ones. Where I'm just like, I had to just turn them down. So there's a lot of strange requests. Because luckily in Cameo, you get to accept it or deny it. So I just denied the strange ones, all the ones where I feel like people are trying to get me to I guess it's a form of BDSM where you get scolded or something. So I get stuff
that's
like
not,
that.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I mean, no. Sorry, I'm not gonna do all that. Yeah.
And talking about that, how have you adapted to being at the front of all media and being on TV all the time? How do you switch on to be that superstar to switching off and just being the normal, Zita Zhang?
I think it is automatic now. It's really become kind of like muscle memory.
Right.
For some reason, when I know it's time to go, it's like, I'm just on. Weird. You just go on and you know it's time to go. I think maybe because I've been doing it for so long at this point, not wrestling, but performance in general, because I've always enjoyed art and performance, specifically singing. That's what traditional art was the art that I was brought up on. So I did that since I was 2 years old, went to art school, went to art college and everything to pursue the arts. But during that time in college, I also found more love for other types and new loves of other type of art forms. But I've been singing since I was four years old.
Wow.
But then I got more serious about it at 9 years old.
Yes.
And then I got really serious about it. Well, it was a whole gradual change. 16, I got more serious. Then I actually have very bad social anxiety and stage fright.
Oh.
It's been a whole process trying to get over it.
Wow.
I'm over it now. I guess you don't ever actually get over it.
It's
kind of a thing that you always just have.
Yes.
But I've learned to cope with it.
That's cool.
I remember I used to almost faint.
Oh, wow.
So nervous of being in front of people. And I remember I would do things to, I started actively trying to get over my social anxiety and stage fright and all that actively since I was 12. But I always knew that I had an issue with that. I was always really shy and couldn't even look people in the face.
Wow. I've noticed that that's maybe an Asian culture.
I think
just very shy and they put their mouth over their face and when they laugh, you know, to show no disrespect to the people.
It definitely is an Asian culture to be more reserved, and it's like growing up, like for people to not be shy, I would say part of it has to do with your natural personality, but another very large part of it has to do with your upbringing. And so just being in the upbringing of not really being around people, and I was born in the U.S., but my grandma took care of me and she didn't know any English. So I didn't learn English until I was 6, even though I was born in the U.S.
Oh, ni hao.
Yeah, right? So it was really tough for me in school. And being shy and not being able to speak the language, it kind of just fed off each other where it made me so scared to interact with people. And from where I'm from, it's kind of racist. There's not that many Asians, and especially back then, you know, it wasn't exactly easy growing up. So it made it really tough for me to have a social life and interact with people. So it made my social anxiety really bad, and I think honestly my social anxiety developed from these experiences in my life. Because as a kid, if you had good experiences and people are wanting to be friends with you, then that'd be different. But since I was in as young as preschool, I've been bullied like my life pretty much. So when I think of interacting with another human being, I think, oh, I'm going to get bullied.
You think twice about it.
Yeah, exactly. So because of that, I guess it developed this type of social anxiety where I have anxiety just being around people and I just want to be invisible, which is funny because now I'm doing the complete opposite of that. But I just want to be invisible. I didn't want anyone to notice me because I didn't want anyone to make fun of me and bully me.
Right.
So I started trying to get over my social anxiety since I was 12. And I think after 10 years, when I was 22, was when I finally felt confident enough in myself to say that I can seem like a normal outgoing person, even though I'm not. So all that practice from before, and then when I was 21 and started modeling, I've been modeling for years and years, like 13 years at this point. 13 years. So it's all that practice of being in front of the camera, being in front of a crowd, and also singing. It really helped teach me to be able to just turn it on when it's time to go. It's the weirdest feeling. It almost feels like I went into another person's body and I'm not me, because knowing how I am naturally and then being a whole different way, but still part of me, it's very strange because it almost seems like someone else's soul went into my body and took my body over. And was like, now it's showtime, you know, but it's the strangest thing. But, you know, I still get nervous. I still have my off days, definitely had my off days. And that still is a thing I have to battle with.
Yeah, right. That's a great answer. So let's go back. So you said that you were born in the U.S. You grew up in Virginia, is that correct?
Yeah, Virginia.
Virginia, right. So so can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like when were your parents born in Virginia? How did that all work with your family?
No, so I think I'm first generation, that's what they call it, where the parent is not born in the U.S. They immigrated over and I'm the first born in the U.S. But my dad is from Shanghai, actually.
Right.
My dad's from Shanghai and my mom is from Taiwan. So my mom's ancestors have Yeah, I was born in Virginia, but my dad's from Shanghai, and my mom is from Taiwan, and her ancestor has been in Taiwan, like, for decades and decades, centuries, or whatever, before Taiwan became Taiwan, when it was still Formosa. So, basically, my dad came over to the U.S. back in the 60s.
And so was that tough for your parents when they firstly came to the U.S.?
Oh my gosh, it was really bad. It was really.
Yes. I mean, you were talking about yourself, you know, being peer pressured, and I could only imagine your family first coming to the U.S.
Yeah, it was really bad. I feel really bad for my dad, honestly.
Right.
He came to the U.S. with absolutely nothing, like literally the clothes on his back and a Chinese to English dictionary. Like,
right.
It's literally like something out of a movie. It's crazy. So what had it happen was when he was 6 years old, when he was 6 years old, my grandma had to sneak him onto a boat in the middle of the night and sneak away to Hong Kong. So it was crazy because if you were caught, you would get killed. Everyone would die. So there's literally all these people trying to escape. And during that time, when they were escaping, my dad actually had an accident and hit his head and fell into the ocean. And it was in the middle of the night. It was all dark because they couldn't use any flashlights. They had to sneak away and not get caught. So because it was dark, there's a 6-year-old boy that's knocked out and can't swim and just in the ocean. So my grandma at the time was crying like, oh, my gosh, my son. And the people that were helping her sneak out was like, shut up. You're going to get us all killed. And my grandma's there like trying not to cry while knowing that her son's probably going to die. And this was out of pure miracle, pure luck. The guy was like, he wasn't, because it was based on everyone's safety over there. So if you fell in the ocean, they don't care. They're just like, on to the next. Like, we're not going to jump in and save you because that means everyone else's life is at
an stake. Extra spot on the boat.
So because of that, one guy just did it in a really like annoyed kind of way. He was like, oh, whatever. Like, he was kind of like, save your son, like, you're gonna get us all killed, whatever, let me see. And he wasn't even jumping in. He literally just swung his arm in the ocean, and with the swipe, he just so happened to grab onto my dad's shirt. And he pulled him in. It was just pure luck.
Wow.
Yeah, like, he didn't even try. He literally just like, all right, whatever, let me see. And he just swoop his hand into the water, and it just so happened to grab onto my dad's shirt, and they pulled him in before he drowned. So then they went over to Hong Kong and stuff and stayed there for a while before they went over to Taiwan and then came over to the U.S.
So
when my dad went over to the U.S., it was really tough. He was 20 years old at the time and had to take care of all his family members because in China, the oldest male had to take care of the family.
Yes.
And unfortunately, my dad actually had two older brothers, but they all died from getting sick back in the day. They just didn't have medicine. So it was two twin brothers that was older than that died, so it made him the oldest. And then he had three younger sisters he had to take care of on top of his mom and dad. So 20-year-old dad has like no life experience at this time, and he's like fresh out the army and has to go over to the U.S. to make money for the family.
Yeah.
So my dad goes over to the U.S. He's literally lived in so many different states in the U.S. But it was really tough because it was hard for him to get a job.
Yeah, of course.
Being discriminated against.
Mm.
And they weren't too fond of, you know, him being Asian. And it was the worst in the 70s when mm-hmm. the Vietnam War happened.
Of course.
And literally, he started working scrubbing floors. Wow. He just went around asking people, hey, can I, like, try, I'll scrub floors for you. And he worked his way up. And his boss liked him so much because he worked so hard that his boss promoted him to being a bartender.
Oh,
and
wow.
So he bartended everywhere. And then it got to a point where he went down to Florida, actually. And it was just really, really racist, especially during that time.
Oh, I could imagine.
He would be bartending and people would literally throw bottles at him.
Oh, my God.
And pull knives out on him. Being racist towards him, telling him that he's the reason why the Vietnam War started.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Not even Vietnamese. Like,
he's not even Vietnamese.
Pure ignorance. You know, pure ignorance. So yeah. I'm just like, wow, you know, he had to deal with a lot, and he saved up a lot of money to all the money that he got, he sent to his family. And then he saved what he could to put towards opening a restaurant. And unfortunately, he was super broke. I remember he told me he had to basically sleep on the bench in New York City and was working 16 and a half hours every day for months and months. Wow. Like, that's barely any sleep. 16 and a half hours, there was only but so many day, like, hours in the day. So he would sleep on the bench and then wake up to work again.
What an inspiration. What an inspirational guy.
Yeah, I mean, I really look up to him. Like, when people ask me, like, who's my inspiration, I would say my dad.
Yes.
He definitely went through a lot, and he takes care of the whole family. So he basically went and saved up all this money, opened up, invested in businesses, and most of them all failed. It was literally failing constantly. Constantly failing.
You just kept trying. Business.
You know, just... Yeah, and you just kept trying. And, you know, what was even also another thing that was messed up was his first marriage. He was married to this woman that basically, like, I don't know, she was just not a good person. She basically just used up all his money. He literally worked for 2 years straight. He gave her all the money, trusting her to handle it because she's from the U.S. So thinking, well, she knows how the laws are here. She knows how banking works. So here, you keep all the money, wife. And next thing you know, at the end of 2 years, he's like, hey, wife, how much money do we have saved up? And there was absolutely nothing. And actually put because of all the, she spent all the money on useless crap.
That's so crazy.
Then divorced, rightfully so.
Good.
Rightfully so.
Yes.
And then met my mom, so, which was great. When he met my mom is, you know, she comes from a very poor family, a family of like seven children, and all barely couldn't make money to eat. Like, my dad and my mom, actually, my dad didn't get to go to college because he grew up like pretty poor.
Yes.
And then my mom, she also grew up poor. She was actually lucky she went to college because her sister, like, let the family invest the money into her for college. So she went to college, but unfortunately, that college didn't help that much. At the time, she learned technology, but for some reason wasn't helpful during that time. When she was in Taiwan. So she went to US, and when she was really good with math, really good with money. So my dad gave her money. She helped invest it. My dad worked. She worked. And together they saved up money to open up a restaurant in Charlottesville, Virginia. And finally that restaurant was the one that was successful.
Got them going.
So we had our restaurant for 26 years.
Wow.
And they opened other restaurants on top of that. And there's a lot of crap that happened with those restaurants. One failed due to 9/11 and other people, like, personal
financial crisis.
yeah, that caused issues because of the family, and then the other one was another family issue. So
right.
Anyway, yeah, but really the restaurant that stood the longest was that first one in Virginia, and that's the one that went and put me through school, put me through college, and that's the one where, you know, changed my life, because I remember being young at two, like I said, I started drawing at 2 years old.
Yes.
I remember being 2 years old and not even having paper to draw on. It was hard to even find paper.
Yeah, right. You
know? So I'm just like, we're just, you know, not doing very well where we could even afford stuff like that. And then when I got to middle school, because their business got better, that's when they actually opened up their business. And it was running for a while. So by the time I was in middle school, I was able to go to private school. It's like night and day.
Yeah.
So yeah, before I was going to public school, like in a crappy area of town, our house is getting robbed constantly. Next thing you know, I'm being sent to private school. But the problem is, like, we were actually, it's like, we don't come from a rich family. We're not rich. So it's not like we got plenty of money to just throw away at whatever. But the thing is, my parents, they spend a lot of money on my education because they see that as super really important. So
yes.
Whatever they do, they will make the money for that. But the problem is, it's not consistent. It's not like I'm guaranteed to have a bunch of money. Like, we barely scrape enough to be able to go to private school. So some years I'd go, other years we just wouldn't have the money to go. So I had to go from school to school a lot. I remember before high school, I had already switched to like at least 9 different schools.
Yeah.
So it was really tough going to school also, because, you know, I never was around at one place long enough either.
So a couple of questions I wanted to ask. Where does wrestling come into this? And the second thing, what I noticed in China with the families is that I would come home from work and I'd see all these little babies in the playground with their grandparents. And it's like, I think I was the only person without a baby there. and I'd always ask them, like, where are the parents? And it's like, oh, they're working. They're working.
Yeah, that was my parents. I never saw them.
Yeah, right.
They were always working. Until I was 12, then I started working at the restaurant, so I saw them often. Because that's basically all the...
You could eat there. Kids,
like, you know, they work at their parents' business at a young age. So I started there at 12 years old, and yeah, that's... That was my life. Then I started seeing them. But from before, I didn't see them too busy working. So my grandma took care of me.
Right.
But then by the time that I was 12, 13, we found out that my grandma had Alzheimer's disease. And it ended up getting really, really bad shortly after. It just comes and then it makes your brain like messed up immediately after. So my grandma actually took care of me. She was the one that got me into wrestling.
Yeah, right. So you used to watch the WWE on the TV? Yeah.
WWE and WCW. So
right.
My grandma used to watch all of that.
Oh, she was a fan as well, right?
She was a huge fan.
Oh, wow.
She was a huge fan. Even though she didn't understand English.
Yes.
But, you know, I think pro wrestling is one of those things where it's universal. It doesn't matter if you don't know the language. So that's why she watched it, because it was the only thing she could understand on TV. So she watched pro wrestling. So I watched it with her because, you know, she took care of me and that was like our bonding time.
Right.
So I guess I've always been interested, but I just never had the confidence to ever pursue it, and I didn't think it was even possible for me. Like, it was so far out of my mind at the time.
Let's go forward. So what did your parents think when you started to do some wrestling training? Because I know that, you know, the Chinese parents are like you're saying before, stick to your education, get a good job, you know, get a good paying job. When you told them that you were going to do wrestling, what was the initial reaction?
Well, luckily, when I was in college, I snuck off and was doing martial arts. So I was doing MMA, and yeah, I had already done jiu-jitsu and MMA. So I did that for about 10 years before I got signed to WWE. So because of that, with MMA, I had already prepped them in that they already see me fight in a cage. So anything after that was like, okay, it's cool. You know, like,
yes,
they already been prepped for the worst. So, I mean, I had to keep it secret from them when I was doing martial arts.
Yes.
And finally I told them, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I really love this, and I think I want to do this as a career. And I invited them to my second fight, and when they saw it, and after I won the fight, they, you know, they became accepting, was like, wow, okay, I think this is something that you're good at, and sure, I mean, if you really want to do it, then go and do it. So they became
Yeah,
it was not like that before. Me and my parents did not get along back in the day.
Yes.
A lot of time to finally get to that relationship where, you know, they became more supportive. And that was such a gradual thing. I mean, even at the time when I was doing MMA, it wasn't like 100% supportive. It was more so like verbally. They're like, sure, we'll be supportive, but they'll still say stuff like, you know, you should go study this. You should go get a license in this. I'm just like, mom and dad, I can't be here doing licenses for real estate or doing this or whatever else, because I need to focus on my dream.
Yes.
And if I'm not 100% with it, there's no way I'm going to make it. So I would get in arguments with them about that. But, you know, it got to a point where finally, after, you know, being homeless in California for almost half a year trying to pursue this dream, when I got signed to WWE, even then they were like, they were kind of skeptical, but
really?
Literally, it took them like a whole year to finally start accepting it after of being there. So after a year, they're just like, okay, when they saw that, you know, I was getting finances, like getting money from it, I was living in a nice place and all that, that's when they actually saw the outcome of it, and they
it's okay now.
Yeah, so they're like, okay, we see what's going on, and this is legit. So they started, you know, believing in me, and now it's, they're fully supportive. After the release and everything, they are fully supportive because they saw that I wasn't willing to give up. And that was one of the nicest things for them to tell me that they were proud of me, because, you know, Asian parents, the Asian culture, they don't really get too deep with their emotions.
Oh,
they don't
yes.
really talk
yes.
about stuff like that. They're not like, hey, we're proud of you, son. We're proud of you, daughter. You know, there's none of that whole thing going on. You know, they show love in a different way.
Yes.
And for them to actually tell me, like, hey, we're really proud of how you handle everything and how you're not ever willing to give up on anything, and it makes us feel like we don't have to worry as parents. We feel like no matter what situation you're in, you're always going to be able to pick yourself back up. And that was the nicest thing to hear from them. So since then, they've been super, super supportive of
That's
everything.
That's great. That's so cool to have them on your side finally after all these years.
I know, literally my whole life. Like, yeah. I'm almost 33 at this point.
Right. Better late than never, I guess, you know.
Yeah, right.
So who were your favorite wrestlers growing up, and who were some of the new wrestlers that are up and coming?
So I had a huge gap during my time watching wrestling. When I was watching it, I watched it at like 4 years old. So this was before I started learning English, because again, I didn't learn English till I was six. And that was just learning to understand, but I still couldn't speak it or anything. So, and my understanding of it was still limited. So 6 years old was the start of me understanding the English language. So at 4 years old, when I was watching wrestling, I didn't even know what I was watching. I was just like, okay, there's people fighting, there's flashing lights, they got bright outfits. I like this. I don't know why I like it, but I like it. So I don't know anything about the storylines or whatever, you know. Yeah. I just know I like it. So at the time, I really enjoyed watching Hulk Hogan. He was my favorite by default because my grandma, that was her favorite.
Right.
So by default, he was my favorite.
Yes.
And then
have you had a chance to meet Hulk Hogan?
No, I want to. By the time I was over at NXT, he wasn't there. Like, there was that whole thing that was going on that was, you know, WWE and him weren't kind of getting along at the time because of the whole stuff that happened back in the day with him. So, you know, he was not invited to WWE at the time. So, no, I didn't get to meet him. Although he did have the surf shop that he has in Orlando, but I'm not sure if it was opened at the time. But I remember when it was opened, and I don't remember if his launch day was when I was already in Florida or if I just read about it online.
Right.
But either way, I didn't get to see it, sadly, but I wanted to. And I wanted to meet him, but I didn't get to. So, you know, hopefully I get to meet him one day because he was really the first person that really got me into wrestling because his character was what kind of got me interested. Yeah, it was kind of my inspiration.
Yeah.
I also liked China. I remember her. Because
that wasn't one of my questions I wanted to ask. Watching you wrestle, and I just think that I was going to ask a question about when you're wrestling in Asia, I've seen that you've wrestled men, and it's just like I was going to ask the question: is that legal in the US, are you okay with this? You know, with the MLW, like we said before, like you were the first female signed for the MLW. So China was a huge influence on you as well, because she was doing exactly the same thing. Like, they couldn't put her up with a blonde supermodel. It was just unrealistic. So, yeah, China, a big influence on you as well.
Yeah, because, well, first, her physique was insanely phenomenal.
Yes.
I was like, wow. And especially, you know, back then, she just really stood out to me. I remember her, even though I didn't understand, I know she really stood out. And I was like, wow, this is a female here with a bunch of buff dudes, and she's holding her own and doing very well. So it really made a big impact on me, especially being a girl. And the thing is, I've always been a tomboy growing up.
Right.
So being a tomboy and seeing her doing something that's considered so manly of a sport, it really inspired me to make me feel like I'm not alone. I'm not that weird. I mean, I guess I am weird, but I'm not that weird because there's someone else that's doing something like this. So that's out of the ordinary. So it's been really nice to see that to what it is now. And I'm fine with wrestling guys and stuff because when I was in MMA, you know, there was not many girls in
that
was before Ronda Rousey even came on the scene.
Right.
So this was back in 2007, 2008 when I started with martial arts, and all I had were guys to train with.
Right.
So I don't even have a choice. So I'm so used to being around guys and having to train with them. And honestly, in a way, I think it's important now that I've, you know, gotten to this point, I think it's important to have two types of training partners. You got to have, you know, having guys and girls is necessary.
Yes.
But my first experience with my martial arts training was all guys. So going into that, having to go against guys all the time, always being smashed on the bottom, always being the one that has to play defense because they're just so much stronger than me. And being in a southern place like Virginia and being with, you know, amateur wrestlers who come from, you know, the country, they don't really like losing. They don't, to a girl especially.
Yes.
So it's like a big ego thing.
Yeah, macho ego, yes.
So they will go really hard with me. So, and back in the day, they don't care, you know. They go really hard with me. But it actually helped me, because for my first jiu-jitsu tournament, I remember just throwing these girls off so easily, because I was just so used to pushing guys' weights off me. I remember, like, pushing this one girl off, and she went flying. I was just like, oh, my gosh. I literally felt like the Hulk. I was just like, oh, my gosh. How am I this strong? I felt so strong and so invincible because I was just so used to training with men.
Yeah, right. And speaking of wrestling and wrestling men and wrestling models, you know, I want to get your opinion on the phrase that gets put out there that wrestling is fake. When somebody comes up to you and says that, or you read that in the media, what do you say to that as a you know, someone that's been in the industry for such a long time now?
Well, I don't really take it as personal, where I think the reason why that is because I come from a martial arts background. So I kind of see it in a different view, because the thing with martial arts, people can say that's fake. People say Kung Fu is fake. People say Taekwondo is fake.
Yes.
Like, every martial arts is technically fake in someone's eyes.
Yes.
So I see pro wrestling as another art form. It's kind of like another martial arts in a way.
Yes.
Because some of those moves actually do work. And the thing is, people call it fake properly because they have UFC and MMA that they're basing it off of.
Right.
They think this is real, this is fake. But, you know, even with MMA, there is ways where it's rigged. Boxing's super rigged.
No offense, boxing.
But boxing's, I mean, everything can be fake. It just depends on what your definition of fake is.
That's right.
Some of the moves in wrestling are not fake, and most of those moves all came from real moves back in the day, but they just do it in a different way. You know, so the only thing that's fake is the outcome. But
those
bumps aren't fake. The
that's
balls
right.
And all that aren't fake.
Just
so,
about to say.
Yeah, they'll call it fake, but I don't take it too personally.
Yeah.
And I'll try and educate people about it when they have misconceptions about it. But if they say it's fake, I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, it's rigged.
Yeah.
So is everything. But, I mean, it's like watching a movie. I'll tell them it's like watching a movie. People don't
that's
go
right.
around saying, oh, that movie, that's so fake.
That's right.
So it's a performance. And
exactly.
This is why it's sports entertainment.
Yes.
It's very obvious at this point that it's entertainment. So for them to go around saying it's fake, then they should be calling movies and theater fake.
That's right. And yeah. I always tell my friends, like, if you think it's fake, go and watch The Undertaker throw Mick Foley off the steel cage, you know, 20 years ago or something like that. And then tell me if it's fake. Oh, my God.
I've gotten more injuries within pro wrestling than MMA within a short time.
That's right.
You know, these injuries aren't fake.
Yes. So tell me about, like, you're saying that you're currently injured at the moment. Is this a reoccurring injury or?
No, it's a brand new injury. I was training. I was doing a plancha out, but I was trying to do it differently where my legs went like straight out.
Right.
Rather than going off to the side, and I just got caught and hit the edge of the ring on the way down. And when I hit the apron on the way down, my knee twisted out and I tore all the ligaments in my knee.
Oh my God. So like, will you be able to start when it comes back, or will you need this sort of time? It's like good timing to, you know, of all the bad things happening in the world at the moment, it gives you some time to rest and recover and heal.
I mean, I'm lucky that I feel feel I'm one of the few people who are able to operate without an ACL. I've proven it with my other knee. I have no ACL in both knees now. But yeah. My other knee, I haven't had an ACL since like 2008. But I hurt that from Muay Thai. And then I had all my fights with no ACL and got through WWE with no ACL because they don't even sign people without it.
Yes.
And actually, from what I was told by a doctor, is that I was the first person they ever signed without an ACL.
Wow. So
I never got surgery with it.
But it's fake, remember?
I use just physical therapy to fix it. And so I make my muscles strong enough to hold everything in. So I don't really believe in surgery because I've been fine without one. And in time, I just need time for this knee to heal to be able to wrestle fully again. But even shortly after I tore my ACL, I didn't even know it was torn. I was shocked. The doctors didn't even think it was torn either. I literally had my doctor friend come over that night when I tore my ACL to check on it to make sure it was fine. It didn't even hurt that much. I was just like, oh, it's probably just a strain. And he looked at it and checked it out. And he was like, yeah, it's probably just a strain. You'll be fine. Next thing you know, I go get an MRI and they say my ACL is fully torn off. It's completely torn. Fully torn. My LCL, MCL, meniscus, and PCL is all torn. So every freaking ligament.
That's hurting me. That's hurting me now. You're just talking about it.
Yeah. Like by doctor's standards, I should get surgery. But the thing is, I've proven I don't need it with my other knee. And I've also proven it so far with this knee. Because it is a fresh injury, of course, I can't do everything. But I've actually still been able to do a lot, considering how bad this injury is. This knee is actually worse. My other knee was way worse than this knee currently now. So if I could do everything on the other knee, then I know I will be fine with this knee. So basically, shortly after it happened, it hurt the first day. That night when it happened, yeah, it hurt. And I couldn't put weight on it. But by the fourth day, I was pretty much fine. After 2 weeks, I went to the doctor's office after the doctor saw my MRI and he kept pushing me to get a surgery. And I keep telling him, no, I'm not going to get surgery. And I told him about my other knee and he was like, all right, well, do this move. I could do it. Do this one. He put me through a whole series of tests for my knee and I was able to do every single one and more. I'm able to do single leg pistol squats on this currently new injured knee. I'm able to single leg jump squats on the knee. I can cut corners and I can even throw Muay Thai kicks where I'm pivoting off of my foot, like twisting.
Amazing.
Which are all things that medically speaking, you can't do.
That's right.
So if I can do all of that within just 2 weeks of injury, I will definitely be fine.
You'll be ready to go.
2 months of proper physical therapy training.
That's great. Well, we look forward to that, definitely. Just a couple of quick more questions before we go. Do you prefer being a baby face or a heel? A good guy or a bad guy? Or a good woman or a good, bad woman?
You know, I haven't really gotten that much experience as heel. I've always been baby face, but I have done some heel work mostly in Florida. Actually, I think probably only in Florida was the only time I was heel. But being heel, even though I don't have that much experience, I think I might actually like it more. I think I kind of find it fun, but
yes.
I have so little experience being heel that I'm not really sure yet because I wasn't being a very efficient heel. I was screaming a lot. It was really hurting my vocal cords, and I can't be having that. But I'm sure if I gave it more time, I would probably like being healed more. I started with babyface.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, you compare it to like Hulk Hogan as well. Like he was the babyface for so many years. And then all of a sudden in WCW, he turned to the bad guy. But the thing is, more people wanted to watch that. They wanted to see him as a bad guy. So maybe in the future you could do maybe.
Well, yeah. a lot of wrestlers say that it's easier to be a heel, and I didn't think that at first, because there's certain parts of it that is easier, but other parts that's harder. But I feel once you learn the basic of pro wrestling, probably being a heel might be a little bit easier. So I would say it allows easier, as in you get more freedom. You get more freedom to not be so cookie cutter perfect, but you get to just do whatever you want. If you mess up, you mess up, you know.
Yes.
Like, people
make fun of that.
That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to make fun of you. So
yes, that's right.
Being a heel gives you more creativity, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And speaking of which, working on the mic too, that's very, very important, not just wrestling. You know, you could be a great wrestler, but if you're not a good person on the mic, they sort of don't sort of push you. And with the current WWE, lots of feedback online is saying that, you know, the promos are too scripted now. You know, they don't, like in the old days, the wrestler would come up and just go and talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. How do you go about it? Like, you were saying that you were a bit shy when you were a bit younger, but how have you developed that with your wrestling career?
You know, I wish I was able to develop it more, because I actually kind of, I would say, prefer it. I prefer more promo stuff, more of the performance acting side of it.
Yeah.
I unfortunately don't get that much experience with it, because the only time I ever really get to do promo work was when I was in NXT. Right. And even then, they don't really do it that much. It's not a thing that they do that often. And I feel like whenever I did do promo work, I've always done pretty well, because I would say I'm pretty good at writing. I used to be a musician before wrestling, so I've always enjoyed writing.
Interesting.
So I think the things that I say in promos are pretty decent, and I can deliver. It's just a matter of being able to get over the nerves. Because when it comes to stuff like that, I think it's because of the lack of practice.
Yes.
That's why I get nervous. So sometimes I will be, you know, super on, other times I won't be, and I can't let it be a hit or miss when it comes to that. I have to always be on. So it's one of those things, within practice and being able to do it more, I'd probably feel more comfortable with, but I think it's something that I probably would like more to have.
Yes. In the future, maybe do it as a heel as well, you know?
Yeah, I would like to. I would definitely like to do that. And hopefully not so scripted. I understand why they, you know, want it all scripted, probably to put over some important parts, but yes. I think that's what they just need, is just to have important parts and trust that people can do well with it. Because all these people are hired as wrestlers for a reason, right? They're not, you know, they have to be pretty decent for them to finally put them up to do a promo.
Yeah, right. And speaking of which, I saw on your Instagram that you're doing you've got a clothing company, FRCH in LA, helping female that are not well off. Is this true?
Oh, for the domestic violence?
Yes, yes.
Yes, that's true. I've had a domestic violence relationship experience. It was really horrible. I was stuck in the relationship for, I'd say, 2 years.
Yes.
And finally was able to get away from it. I was very lucky to have gotten away, because I know for a fact I would definitely be dead right now. I would have been shot or stabbed, or, you know, I definitely would be dead. Getting away from that situation was very, I guess it was, in a way, a miracle. It was in a way a miracle because I was stuck with this dude that was also an MMA. He was a professional MMA fighter, much bigger than me, obviously can kick my ass.
Yes.
At the time, I was only like 120 pounds. I don't know how much that is in kgs, but I think that's like 50-something, 52, 51-something.
Right.
Like small. I was very small.
Yes.
And he was like 215 pounds of straight muscle. I don't even know how many kgs that is, but he is a big dude. And we were in a relationship. Well, like kind of by accident, I never wanted to be in a relationship with him, but he kind of just claimed me and we were kind of just seeing each other. So I kind of went along with it and everything seems fine. It seemed fine for a whole half a year.
Wow.
A whole half a year. Like to fool someone for that long, it takes some great skills.
Yeah.
So half a year, everything went perfect. And then we moved in together. And 2 months after that is when the real him came out. He did crazy things like strangled me, picked me up on my neck, threw me across the room, like
whipped
me with a belt for 30 minutes straight. Luckily, I have that whole thing recorded, which then I took to court and put a restraining order on him. And I was lucky to get away because I was living with him and trying to get out of the situation. He wouldn't let me out. He wouldn't let me leave him.
Mm.
And I couldn't, there's so many things involved. There was politics involved, gym politics. Like, cause he was like the all-star of the gym and the team.
Having that character, having that character and then bringing it back home into the home life, domestic life as well.
Yeah. Like he has, you know, so there was political reasons why I couldn't just leave. There was threats. He was threatening to shoot me and my whole family if I ever got locked up. And his dad is psycho and has been in prison for 10 years for assault. So I have no doubt that he would come and kill me if I put his only and beloved son in jail.
Well, Zeta, I tell you what, I'm glad that you got out of that and you're able to continue this amazing career that you've had, like with WWE and mixed martial arts, and you've gone on to bigger and better things. Good on you for that. And
Thank you so much. And that
sort of brings me to this question. So what advice would you give to inspiring female wrestlers? Not just female, but any sort of particular wrestler, what advice would you give to them?
I would say that any type of wrestler that want to just, or any person in general, not just wrestlers, but it's doing what you love. If you really just pursue what you love without caring what people will think, that is the biggest key to making it, because you don't have the outside noise telling you can't do something, because that's going to be the issue. That's what I've been told my whole life, that I can't do something.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I didn't care. My whole thing was to prove them wrong and do what I wanted to do. And that's what got me where I am. If I didn't keep on pushing and listen to all the haters like I did for the first half of my life,
yes,
I would be nowhere. So it's really just finding your true passion and pursuing it without a care in the world.
That's amazing. You're very, very inspiring, and especially for the we also have, obviously, this podcast goes into China, and even though it's spoken in English, I still have some followers, listeners there. So do you have a message to the people in China and Taiwan?
Yeah.
Maybe you could say it in Chinese or Mandarin.
Yeah. 中国朋友，谢谢你们对我那么好，我每次去那边表演都很高兴，然后你们的掌声让我很幸福，希望我可以继续去那边，然后见你们全部。 然后帮中国看到 不一样的摔跤模式，然后把这个摔跤的表演给你们
嘻嘻
越来越精彩
嘻嘻、哦、Very good. Thank you, Zeta. And finally, what does the future hold for Zeta Zhang? What can we see? What are your future goals in your career?
Gonna heal up this knee, continue wrestling for MLW and wrestling around the world, back in China, for MKW and various other companies. And
is Australia also on the list?
Australia is definitely on the list. I've been wanting to go to Australia, so definitely on the list. Yeah, all that. And of course, doing my online stuff. I'm back on Twitch and wanting to focus more on the acting performance side as well.
Yes. And is there anything that you want, any promotion, any endorsements, anything that you want to, any of your sponsors that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, K-Swiss, thanks for always making me look hot with your sweet ass shoes. yeah, K-Swiss, they've been a great sponsor. Orgain Protein, I really enjoy their sponsorship too. And I'm open to a lot of other sponsors, y'all. I'm looking for a new coffee sponsor. New coffee sponsor. But thank you for all the fans who actually send me Starbucks gift card. That's amazing.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yes, I want our coffee sponsors.
Can they send some Starbucks to my way as well?
Yeah, right?
Come
that'd
on.
Be awesome.
I also saw you do some things for Manscaped as well on your Twitter. Is that another sponsor?
Yeah, I mean, that was more of a one-time sponsor thing.
Oh, okay.
Like a sponsorship deal. But yeah, they're cool. They've definitely been awesome, and they sponsored me for that post.
Well, Zeta, we could continue talking for, I think, hours and hours and hours. And I,
yeah. I still, sorry, I just got
And we still didn't get into your modeling, to your singing. I wanted to talk about that as well. So maybe you can come back in the future and we can talk about that as well.
Sounds great.
All right, Zeta. Thank you very much for your time. I know you're a super, super busy girl, so I really do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for everything. Really nice meeting you, Craig.
Yeah, not a problem. Bye-bye.
Bye.